Oh, God. Well, look, the last chapter of my book, I have to say, is called Cows Need Milking Twice a Day. The reality is that if you think about dairy, 100 years ago, there were a couple of guys in a paddock going mush with a bunch of cows, milking them by hand, and then you get automation, milking parlours, electric fences, upgraded feed, A2 milk, and now there's automated milking machines that you can do sitting in your living room. The guy who is saying to you, it wouldn't work in that company, is saying that the pinnacle of human achievement is the way we do things today. So often the argument is not anything based on substance, it's based on attitude.
Hello and welcome to Working It. I'm Isabel Barrick. Today's episode's not about dairy farming, but about the four-day week, meaning getting paid a full-time wage for only 80% of the original hours. Understandably, it's a very popular option among a lot of workers and a less popular working style for employers, many of whom tend to have a long list of arguments for why it wouldn't work for them.
Now, the other one is productivity. Well, how do you measure productivity? And as I said, what that says is you're not measuring productivity. You're using time as a surrogate. And then it translates to, well, I'd have to recruit 20% more people, or I can't close my company for a day. I don't close my company for a day. People will say size. Well, Unilever's doing it. Microsoft's doing it. Manufacturing won't work. Volkswagen are doing it. And then the final one, which is usually the killer, is, well, it wouldn't work in medicine. Well, medicine's already using shifts, point number one. Point number two, the Americans, good example, kill 250,000 people in their health service every year as a consequence of misdiagnosis occasioned by stress and overwork. And you only have to answer the question, do you want to be operated on by the doctor who's been working 20 hours straight or the one who's fresh?
That's Andrew Barnes. He's very enthusiastic about the four-day week, and he would be. He's essentially a salesman for the concept. He runs 4-Day Week Global, a group that lobbies, produces research and assists businesses in implementing reduced hours. He became really passionate about the concept after he stumbled across the idea while reading a magazine on a flight.
I was reading a couple of articles about British productivity, and this is back in 2017, and they were saying that the Brits were productive for 2.5 hours a day and the Canadians for 1.5 hours a day. And I wondered why that was happening. I wondered if that was happening in my business, and I wondered what would happen if I changed how people worked, whether in fact I would get better productivity rather than less productivity if I went to a 4-day week.
The business he's referring to there is Andrew's main business. So well before 4-Day Week Global was imagined, Andrew was the founder of Perpetual Guardian, which is New Zealand's largest statutory trust fund. That means it manages wills, trusts and estate planning for many families in the country. And did you take any advice from the many consultancies on this, or did you just go for it with a pilot?
I winged it. I would love to say that, you know, this was a really planned thing. I got off the plane. I phoned my head of HR and said, I've got a great idea. I think we'll do a 4-day week. And sort of there was dead silence on the phone. Well, by the time I got back, she deleted every email I'd sent on this and was working on the assumption that I was mad and that I'd forgotten about it. And unfortunately, I came back and said, no, I've put it on a post-it note. Let's try the 4-day week. As far as the board were concerned, I announced it on national television before I told them.
When the workers started on this, were they cautious? I mean, it seems like a sort of almost too good to be true situation. Were people hesitant about taking up the offer?
Somebody videoed the actual original announcement, and there is cautious laughter when we talk about it. Because obviously, you're right. I mean, why would somebody give me a day off a week? There's got to be a catch. And obviously, people start to think maybe it's about job cuts, maybe it's about pay cuts. But what I was saying to the team is, look, this is an honest compact between me and you. I think that this will be better for you working 4 days. Equally, it's got to be just as good for me. I've got to get the same thing out of it that I otherwise would have got from a 5-day week. So, you know, it starts a very open conversation. The next thing is, I have no idea how to implement it. And this is up to you. This is up to you to think about what you will do, what you will do as a team, what you will do personally differently in order to deliver this concept we have of the 100-80-100. 100% pay, 80% time, but provided we get 100% productivity.
So Andrew's saying there quite rightly that for this to work anywhere, it's got to work for everybody, and business included. So I'm joined now by Emma Jacobs, FT journalist and Working It regular, who's going to help me crack this one open. Emma, Andrew's already explained a few reasons why people think this won't work in their company. Have you heard of any others?
I mean, I thought it was really interesting. The exceptionalism is the big issue. I think lots of companies believe that it won't work in their industry and so they can't possibly do it. So I think that inertia is a real issue. And I think that it's interesting to see how it's changed over the pandemic, if it's shifted at all.
Has it shifted at all in the pandemic? What are you seeing?
I mean, I've seen more companies try four-day weeks. There was one company that tried it initially to cut pay. So it was 80% working week for 80% of the pay. And then actually they've realised that productivity wasn't affected and actually it would be a perk that they could use as a thank you to say, right, we'll restore it to 100% of pay. And that's been gladly received. And another company realised that with remote working that they were going to have to play around with their perks. And one way of doing that was to introduce a four-day week so that they could compete with a capital city that was further away.
Right. And Andrew says his team's productivity is up 25%. But in things like factories or big companies where they have a big turnover of staff, would it work as well? I'm not sure.
I mean, I think there's no reason why it couldn't work. I mean, I think that they're already doing shifts. They know how to slice and dice these working arrangements. I think the problem often is that lots of employees want more hours rather than less because they need the money. So I think there's a real inequity when it comes to hours. And I think often some of these companies are trying the head office as four-day working weeks, and then everybody on the shop floor, for example, then does a five-day working week, which seems quite unfair.
Yeah, I'd be not that happy if I was left on 5 days while everyone went to the pub on the fifth day at head office. So one thing I wondered is how this model has fared during COVID, because we've seen time and time again that people are working longer hours generally. And I guess the question is it even realistic to maintain 4 days during a crisis? Here's Andrew on what's happened recently.
If anything, I think what COVID has done is accelerated the process. If you'd have asked me 3 years ago that congressmen in the States would be dropping a bill in to legislate for reduced hours working, or you'd have the well-publicised trials in Iceland, Ireland, Scotland, the legislation that's coming through in Russia, I'd have said, you're joking, this is a long burn. But what COVID has done is, first of all, it's made people focus on how they want to work. And it's empowered workers, the great resignation all over the world. You ask a worker what they want to do, they want to work less. The next thing that's happened is that we've suddenly had to make our companies work in a different way. We've also had people who are, you know, out of the loop, either because they're isolating, they've got COVID, or they're looking after family members. Now, bizarrely, the four-day week is a construct. And we don't close for a day, but for example, we operate the normal five-day week. But because we operate in a way with people rotating out all the time, we actually, pre-COVID, found our company was far more resilient. So when we went through the lockdown here in New Zealand, all but about 200,000 people in the country were taking government subsidy. We got two record months and 1 month where we missed a record by $27,000 and didn't take a cent. So it makes your company stronger and better in the modern world, bizarrely. And I think people are now starting to see that.
Emma, do you think what Andrew says is realistic on a big scale? You know, has the COVID empowered staff to ask to work less? Is it linked to the Great Resignation, do you think?
I mean, I think it's a very difficult position for employees to ask for less working time, but it is a way of kind of solving a pay conundrum, I guess, which is to work reduced hours for the same amount of pay. But I think generally, It has instigated a way of thinking about the working week. And we've seen with Arup, for example, doing the 7-day week, or other companies doing 4-day working weeks, or companies doing sort of compressed office hours and the flexibility to work around those hours, meaning that people are being more experimental with time as well as place, which has had a lot of the focus of kind of flexible work discussions around COVID.
Yeah, I think we are moving on to a time discussion, which I think is really helpful. And I'm interested that his office doesn't close. So I think that's probably the way to do it, isn't it? That you never close your office. It's just that people are telling each other when they're going to be there. But is there a risk in this that we go back to this idea of time? You know, 4 days could mean 4 12-hour days, which rather removes the point of it.
I mean, I think there is a risk, but I think in some ways there's more of a risk when people have different arrangements. So often women who've gone part-time, not speaking from experience, obviously lots of women end up doing 5-day weeks for 4 days pay. And that is pretty miserable experience. So I think in some ways, although it is entirely possible that everyone ends up doing, you know, the same hours as they were doing before, that if you actually universalize it, then it makes it everybody's problem to manage, and that it's visible instead of being these kind of hidden arrangements that one individual has to bear because they've had the favor of having reduced hours.
Yeah. And it's interesting, I was thinking back, there are some jobs where they give you Friday afternoon off and have done for a long time. I'm thinking of some publishers in London. I would often get an email on a Friday afternoon saying, we don't work Friday afternoons during the summer. And I just thought, how brilliant is that?
I mean, there are some jobs where there's a kind of, you know, my client wants me now, so I must respond at all times. But if you're clear about when you're not available and that everybody has to agree to that, including the clients, except for urgent projects, I think that there can be some sort of curtailment of office hours. I think that the problem is there's a sort of slippage in that every project is important and there's some sort of wiggle room that gets people out of it.
Yeah, I think the pressure from clients is often cited as a reason for not doing compressed or shorter hours. And it was interesting to hear what Andrew had to say about the challenges they faced.
One of the challenges is that quite often this debate comes from the left, comes from a demand for reducing hours. And inevitably, that pushes companies to the other side of the ledger and the right. And what we're trying to do is saying, actually, it has all of the social benefits, but this is fundamentally a brilliant business strategy. A brilliant business strategy. You get better staff retention. You can attract better staff. Your sick days half, and your productivity goes up by anything up to 50%. What's not to like as a business strategy? So if we can phrase it that way, we've got more chance, I think, of businesses all over the world saying, you know what, let's follow the idea that Henry Ford had 100 years to reduce the working week from 6 to 5. Let's actually reduce it from 5 to 4, or from 40 hours to 32. And the benefits that we will get, the world will get, will be absolutely material.
Emma, I remember the economist John Maynard Keynes suggested in 1930 that by 2130 we'd be working 15-hour weeks. I think that's cited quite often. I've seen it cited often in FT articles. Are we on track for that?
Only time will tell, Isabel. No.
No.
I don't think so. I mean, I think that obviously there is a threat that automation reduces. I mean, that often comes further down in these articles, in that there's a kind of techno-optimism or techno-pessimism, which is robots are either taking our jobs away or creating freedom for us to enjoy this free time that Keynes was talking about. And so it's probably a combination of the two. I mean, I think that there is some of the experiments of 4-day working weeks with knowledge workers is that in an ideal scenario, I guess, that you're so enthralled to your job, as you were saying earlier, that you use this free time to kind of think about your job and kind of have the solutions to problems that you couldn't get to when you're on a treadmill of productivity, and that this could free up your time to be more creative.
Yeah, I think the biggest benefit for me of this is that you couldn't perhaps, you know, do all your caring responsibilities, your personal admin, all of that stuff can go into a time when you're not meant to be working. So rather than trying to squeeze it in and not devoting your full attention to your job, you can take that time away and then be much more focused when you do work. I think that's a huge benefit potentially, especially in the world we're in now where people's caring responsibilities have really grown.
Well, I think the problem with the long hours industries or the model of working long hours to get ahead is that some of those hours are useless. I've heard of lots of people, women, complaining about men just being in the office doing nothing really, but showing that they're there. And then that being the model to get ahead. And then if you're the one that has to duck out at 5 o'clock, then you look like you're not committed when in fact you've actually put in the same amount of real work.
Yeah, anything that reduces the curse of presenteeism when we all come back to the office finally would be a very welcome thing. So I think the 4-day week is a great idea. It might not be for every company, but there are aspects of it that I think everyone can benefit from. And if anyone would like to take Friday afternoons off in summer, I'm all for that.
Oh, me.
With thanks to Andrew Barnes, and do check out 4-Day Week Global. It has a lot of resources and free support that they're offering to businesses who try this out. And if you're interested in taking part in a trial, he'd love to hear from you. And also thanks to my FT colleague, Emma Jacobs. If you'd like to read more about 4-Day Weeks, I'll put a link in the show notes to Emma's article on this and some other FT pieces. And please do get in touch with us. We want to hear from you, and we're at workingit@ft.com or with me at Isabel Berwick on Twitter. Working It's produced by Novel for the Financial Times. With thanks to the producer Anna Sinfield, executive producer Joe Wheeler, we have research from Pippa Smith and Lee Meyer, and editorial direction from the FT's Renee Kaplan and production support from Persis Love. Join us again next week, when we'll be looking into diversity, or the lack of it, in the workplace, and how that impacts businesses' bottom line.